Post-Beitar Jerusalem, post-Bar Kokhba Jerusalem, was one bereft of Jews entirely, one which embodied the Roman proclamation that they were not even worried about an attempt by Jews to retake the city. Jews, according to the law, could not enter the city and apparently could not even come that close to it. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 110, Aelia Capitolina. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. On the southern side of the Temple Mount sits the Double Gate, the twin pair of entryways created during the Umayyad period. Together with the other southern gates of the Mount, they are known by Jews as the Gates of Chulda, a reference to the traditional name of the original entryway, a name perhaps linked to that of Chulda, the great female prophet of the end of the First Temple period. It was originally through the southern entrance that the multitudes of pilgrims had entered the temple complex when the sacred edifice in Jerusalem still stood. These hundreds of thousands climbed the pilgrimage road during the festivals, as we have previously described, and entered the temple therein. But today the southern gates are closed up. No Jewish pilgrims enter them now. And if one looks directly above the double gate, one will see, and we have sent you this image, that inscribed on one of the stones are letters spelling out Latin words. But the words are upside down because the stone is upside down. The Roman proclamation, again inverted, reads, "To the Emperor Caesar Titus Aelius Hadrianus Antoninus Augustus Pius." This indicates, as Simon Montefiore describes in his book on Jerusalem, that the stone had originally been elsewhere, bearing a Roman proclamation, and then years later had been taken and utilized by the Umayyads for their creation of this version of the southern entryway area. In other words, what had once been a prominent piece of Roman hagiography became centuries later a mere building block for those who ruled the city centuries after the Romans were gone. This stone, rightly understood, is a haunting reminder of when Jerusalem was empty of Jews. And the fact that today it exists upside down is also a reminder of all that has wondrously been inverted and miraculously achieved in our own age. With the Bar Kokhba revolt defeated, Hadrian was left with his reputation somewhat damaged, or as the Roman historian Cassius Dio wrote, quote, "Many Romans, moreover, perished in this war. Therefore Hadrian, in writing to the Senate, did not employ the opening phrase commonly affected by the emperors, 'If you and your children are in health, it is well. I and the legions are in health,'" end quote. In other words, the Roman legions, following the defeat of this Jewish rebellion, were not at all in excellent health. But Hadrian was at this point able to proceed unimpeded with his plans to remake Jerusalem into a thoroughly pagan city, one in which nary a Jew was to be found, and in which the worship of the Roman gods and the Roman emperors would replace what had been the center of biblical monotheism on earth. The city was named Aelia Capitolina, words which join references to Hadrian's family and to his pagan faith. According to Cassius Dio, a temple of Jupiter was created on the Temple Mount itself, and we have accounts describing a statue of Hadrian that sat in the site of what had been the Jewish sanctuary, apparently in the location of the Holy of Holies. Of course, for Hadrian, the intent was not for this Roman city to be as important to the empire as Jewish Jerusalem was for the Jews. The goal was to assimilate the city into the empire so that no traces of the centuries of Torah faith and observance would remain. Simon Montefiore puts it this way, quote, "Aelia Capitolina was a minor Roman colony of 10,000, without walls, just two-fifths of its former size, extending only from today's Damascus Gate to the Gate of the Chain, with two forums, the Temple of Jupiter on the site of Golgotha, two thermal baths, a theater, a nymphaeum, statues of nymphs around pools, and an amphitheater, all decorated with colonnades, tetrapylons, and statues, including a large one of the 10th Legion's very unkosher boar. Gradually, the 10th Legion was moved away from Jerusalem as the Jews, no longer a threat, came to be regarded as more as an irritant," end quote. As the early church father Justin Martyr, whom we shall discuss in a later podcast, wrote to the Romans about Jerusalem, quote, "It is guarded by you lest anyone dwell in it, and that death is decreed against a Jew apprehended entering it, you know very well," end quote. Death decreed against a Jew apprehended entering it. That is what Jerusalem became for the first time since David first took the city. Martin Goodman, in his book Roman Jerusalem, describes how the remaking of Jerusalem went hand in hand with undoing its Jewishness, and, indeed, how the undoing of the Jewishness of the most Jewishly central city in the Holy Land went hand in hand with Roman PR denouncing any Jewish claim to the Holy Land. Quote, writing in the early 4th century CE, Eusebius quotes a certain Ariston of Pella, who had recorded that Hadrian commanded that by a legal decree and ordinances the whole nation should be absolutely prevented from entering thenceforth even the district around Jerusalem, so that not even from a distance could it see its ancestral soil. Thus, notes Eusebius, when the city came to be bereft of the nation of the Jews, and its ancient inhabitants had completely perished, it was colonized by foreigners. The name of Jerusalem had already ceased to exist officially in 130. Now, the name of the whole province was changed to Syria Palestina, resurrecting an ancient Greek designation of the region, which referred not to the Jews, but to their ancient enemies, the Philistines. End quote. Thus began an ahistorical habit that would occur again and again, the denial of the Jewish roots in the Holy Land, the denial of the Jewish right to the Holy Land, the denial of the Jewishness of Jerusalem and the Holy Land. Goodman again, quote, the coins issued by the colony of Aelia Capitolina show that it flourished as a pagan city on the site where Jerusalem had once been. The earliest coin types show the emperors as founders of the colony, plowing its boundaries, the she-wolf with the twins Romulus and Remus, the legionary standards, the temple of Jupiter Capitolinus, and the Capitoline triad. Three coin types from the time of Marcus Aurelius depict Rome as a goddess, armed and seated, with her left arm resting on a spear, and in the palm of her extended right hand, the figure of a winged victory. Later coins in the 3rd century exhibit less distinctively Roman traits, with images most often of the goddess Astarte and the god Serapis, but they are still defiantly pagan. The 10th Legion, whose camp continued to occupy the southwestern hill of Jerusalem, near what is now the Jaffa Gate, advertised its presence on ceramic roof tiles, bricks, and pipes, each stamped LEGXPRE, sometimes just LXF, and often bearing the legion's insignia of a galley and a wild boar. The wide distribution of roof tiles produced by the legion shows that they were used extensively for purely civilian purposes, and it is reasonable to assume that the soldiers were well integrated into the life of the colony. The main center of the civilian colony seems to have been sited to the north of the legionary camp, in what is now the northern quarter of the old city, where the modern street plan still follows in part its rectangular layout. The arch gate leading onto the main colonnaded north-south street is still visible below the Damascus Gate built by Suleiman the Magnificent in the mid-16th century. This and other arched gates, such as the so-called Ecce Homo Arch on the Via Dolorosa, fulfilled a propaganda rather than a defensive function. Impressive arches of this sort were a common feature of cities in the Roman Near East in the 2nd and 3rd centuries CE. Aelia Capitolina does not seem to have been walled. The inhabitants could be confident that, despite all that their city represented to the Jews, they would be secure. End quote. Thus, post-Beitar Jerusalem, post-Bar Kokhba Jerusalem, was one bereft of Jews entirely, one which embodied the Roman proclamation that they were not even worried about an attempt by Jews to retake the city. Jews, according to the law, could not enter the city and apparently could not even come that close to it. Intriguingly, as Goodman further points out, there is evidence that Jews did secretly attempt to visit Jerusalem, and we shall discuss that in a future episode. But fundamentally, what occurred was that a faith and a people were cut off from a city that remains so central to that faith and to that people. After Hadrian died, he was succeeded by Antoninus Pius, who participated in the de-Judaization of Jerusalem by having a statue of himself set up on the Temple Mount adjacent to that of Hadrian. It is apparently, ladies and gentlemen, from the base of that statue that later Umayyad residents in Jerusalem took the stone to build what is now above the double gate in the southern wall of the Temple Mount. Looking back then, it is truly, with the hindsight of history, an amazing metaphor. What was once at the top of the Temple Mount, in a statue made for a Roman emperor, is now at its foot. What was once a celebration of a Roman ruler is now a mere building block. And the words that once proclaimed the emperor's glory have now been gloriously turned upside down, inverted, highlighting how in our own age, so much of what Rome had brought about has been inverted. How a city that once barred Jews is now, once again, thank God, filled with Jews. But we must remember why the Jews never forgot Jerusalem so that they could ultimately return. It was not only, or first and foremost, for the outer city of Jerusalem for which Jews longed. Rather, the locus of their longing was first and foremost the site on which Antoninus Pius's statue and Hadrian's statue were once installed, the Temple Mount. That, for Jews, has always been the epicenter of Jerusalem itself, the true source of the sanctity of the rest of Jerusalem. It was always the Temple Mount that lay at the heart of the Jewish longing for Jerusalem. We can only appreciate the fact that what is called the Gates of Chulda bear today the inversion of an emperor's power if we understand that the southern gates of the Temple Mount were once the site of Jewish pilgrims streaming into the temple itself. If Jews in the age of Hadrian refused to forget Jerusalem, it was because they refused to forget these pilgrims. In other words, the Jews who lived in an age when Jerusalem was bereft of Jews refused to forget a time when the Temple Mount was full of Jews. And this means that even as we marvel at the inversion in our own age, at the fact that so much of Aelia Capitolina has been reversed, we should also mourn the fact that the gates at the south of the Temple Mount are still shut to Jews, and we must also ponder what Jews today owe to the longing of the Jews of the past. Menachem Begin, remembering the devotion that the Jews of his hometown showed to the memory of the Temple, describing how they brought the Temple to life in their minds and in their hearts every year on Yom Kippur, as they stood in the synagogue, went on to link, in a speech that we have sent you today, the love of those Jews and the southern gates of the Temple Mount as they stand in our own age. Begin said as follows, in a speech translated by my colleague Neil Rogachevsky and my student Michael Weiner, quote, "We will remember their love and sanctify it just as we merited to free the land of Israel and redeem Jerusalem. And the priests and the people standing in the courtyard of the temple, this was the prayer they recited. And the day came that we redeemed Jerusalem, and we have dug into its dirt, and we have walked the path, and so we have seen the gates of Chulda. They are still locked. And behold, the mighty stones the Roman legions threw downward, covering the gates for 1,800 years. But they are there before our eyes. Recalling your prayers in the synagogue over 50 years ago, standing there by the southern wall, you can see in your mind's eye the gates of Chulda and the masses of people flocking through them." End quote. The inverted stone that was originally in the statue of Antoninus Pius, that now is atop a blocked southern gate, is thus a reminder of the miracles of our age, but is also an embodiment of all for which we still yearn. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.